people should pay much greater attention to the design of their ebooks. Ebooks don't have to look like Internet Explorer circa 1998. They can look really nice. They can be well designed and have pristine typography. It just requires a little bit of planning, like thinking about the font issue before you start production and choosing fonts that will port well to screens.
That's my guest today, cross-media manager and ebook expert Laura Brady. We'll talk with Laura about ebooks in just a moment, but first, let me welcome you to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. Thanks for streaming in. I'm an independent publisher, and I'm your host, Peter Goodman. Inside Independent Publishing comes to you from IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association. IBPA's mission is to lead and serve the independent publishing community through advocacy, education, and tools for success. For more about IBPA and how we can help you be a better publisher and sell more books, whatever kind of publisher you are, go to ibpa-online.org. You can also tweet questions and comments to me at the handles at Peter Goodman or at IBPA. Now, let's get started. Today, I'm talking with Laura Brady. Laura is the manager of cross media for the House of Anansi Press in Toronto. Until recently, she ran a conversion house working with a broad range of small and medium-sized publishers to manage their digital publishing. Laura is also on the steering committee of eBook Craft, a major conference devoted to eBook production, and she is the editor-in-chief of EPUB Secrets, the world's best resource for all things EPUB. Laura consults on workflow, tools, specifications, and production best practices, and for punishment, in her spare time, she follows the Toronto Blue Jays, much as I follow the San Francisco Giants. She also probably tweets too much, but we really wouldn't want her to tweet less. Her Twitter handle is at LauraB7. And today we're talking about ebooks and the indie publisher and author publisher. So welcome, Laura Brady.
Thank you, Peter. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you very much for making time. Now, vendors and others make it sound like creating an ebook is really easy. In InDesign, for example, there's even an ebook output function. I don't really think for a moment that it's a surefire solution, but many small publishers and author publishers often want to, or they need to create their own ebooks, and they may not actually have a very big budget to do it. So is that something that they can do successfully and pass all the validation tests that they need to from the different vendors?
So I have a lot of opinions on this, and I'll start small and get bigger.
Great.
What I think about this is that you, as with most things in life, you get what you pay for. So if you use an automated tool that's a free service, you're going to get what you pay for. And that doesn't mean that the more you pay, the better the quality. I'm just saying that those free services maybe aren't the best. And what I mean by that in general is that it may look okay on a couple of reading systems, but under the hood, it's actually quite a mess. And so who cares? Why does that matter if the coding under the hood is a real mess? Well, I also take accessibility really seriously, and so that's why it matters. It feels to me like digital publishing and ebooks specifically are a real opportunity to reach a broad range of readers, including print disabled readers. And so if your book is shoddily produced, you're going to skip that part of the market.
Well, what are some examples of where messy coding under the hood are going to interfere with accessibility? So, I mean, you're saying it might work okay as an EPUB or as a Kindle, but there are other areas where it's not going to?
So it takes an ebook developer to create a semantically meaningful EPUB who knows how to structure it properly and use HTML in meaningful ways, in ways that mean something to the screen readers, for example, who interpret that for a print disabled reader. It may look okay on the screen because it's styled accurately, but underneath the hood, it may not be coded accurately. That's really what I mean. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But what is the impact of it not being coded accurately? Where is that really going to create problems down the line?
So some print-disabled readers will read on screen readers or devices that navigate via headers. And a header that's coded with a header tag will then signify itself to the machine that's reading it. It will be machine readable. A header that's coded with a P tag, but with styling that makes it look like a header, is not going to be machine readable. It won't signify itself to the screen reader that's reading it. And so it will get missed. There are books that are coded completely with P tags and have no structure at all. And then there, you know, the correct pauses aren't built in if it's being read aloud, for example, or navigation is literally impossible because there's nothing to navigate to and from.
So there are standards in the industry that are designed to prevent that from happening. They're basically saying, if you're going to produce an EPUB, produce it like this with these tags. But I guess what you're saying is that a lot of people don't do that.
Well, because they don't understand the needs of HTML. Because they're, I'll step back again just a minute. A lot of those conversion tools will take Word files that have headers that look like headers but aren't tagged as headers, even in the Word file, and make it look like what it's supposed to look like, but they're still missing that key piece of semantic information that makes it machine readable. So it is possible to make really good books in Word, they're really well-structured files in Word, where the HTML that comes out of Word is not worthy of mention, just as an aside. How it gets converted, it still needs in my opinion, as a longtime ebook developer, it still needs a human hand to help it into the HTML and to make sure that it's working well.
Presumably, a lot of the author publishers and small publishers, they're not tech people and they're not familiar with this. How do they know when they have a problem, and what do they do about that problem? Should they, from the get-go, start working with a professional developer?
One of the other things I think is that. So how do you know you have a problem? There's not really a good way to know. Like, it could pass validation. Your ebook could pass validation and upload the source and look like everything is just perfectly fine. But knowing whether or not it meets accessibility standards is a whole different kettle of fish, so to speak. And there isn't really a good way to test for that outside of a knowledgeable human.
Right.
So, like hiring a disabled reader to try to consume your book, like doing some testing like that, or hiring an ebook developer who understands accessibility issues.
And where does someone go looking for developers like that?
It's an excellent question, and I have thought a lot about this. I think that there are a couple of services. Like, there's a service from the UK called Readsy, and they will connect you to ebook developers. Ebook developers sort of advertise themselves to that site and then connect author publishers there. That's one service. Another place to look is on Twitter at the eProduction hashtag. So it's hashtag EPRDCTN. There are a lot of really smart, knowledgeable ebook developers who converge on that website, on that hashtag, who you could advertise for a need there and find really fine people who could support your work.
Do you have an opinion as to using, say, domestic providers versus overseas, like in Philippines or India?
I have so many opinions, Peter. I mean, this circles back to what I said initially, in that you get what you pay for. So if you're paying 10 cents a page for a conversion, you're likely getting a 10 cent conversion. If you're paying $5 a page for a conversion, you're getting something that's significantly better. There are a lot of overseas developers who are excellent, but that marketplace is really cutthroat, and there are a lot of really cheap providers. So that's, I don't like to write off whole continents of workers. There is a lot of good work that comes from overseas, but there's also a lot of cheap work that comes from overseas.
Yeah, we get solicited.
There's a lot of cheap work that comes from North America too. Like, it's not. It's equal opportunity in that sense.
Or that appears to come from North America, but might actually be routed from some other place. It's hard to tell sometimes, I think.
Entirely
with some of the
providers. Possible.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So let's move on to a slightly different subject. If you're a small press and you have to do a lot of the work yourself, and you know that you're going to be working in print and in ebook, are there things that you might do as a designer in your print book, but you just know are going to create problems in ebooks along the way, and that you should avoid any kinds of sidebars or special caption placements or weird footnoting or anything that people should just avoid to eliminate problems?
Yeah, so there's a lot of things you can do to plan for concurrent production, so digital and print at the same time. The one thing I like to advise people against is drop caps. They aren't really working well across the device spectrum, but there are ways to make them work. It involves some hand coding to make it work. And there is an ebook developer called Jiminy Penaz from France who has developed something called the Blitz CSS. If you Google Blitz CSS, you'll find his GitHub repository and some blog posts about this. And he has solved the drop cap problem. He has some really good CSS. It means you have to open up the ebook and plop the CSS in and make sure that it's working. So it requires some technical sophistication, but he has found a workaround for the specifically for that issue, and he has some really good recommendations for other issues as well.
Great, but not for the faint of heart. So if
not for the faint of heart, So the other things I would advise are things like this: when you're designing for print, choose fonts that will easily convert to a screen reader. So sometimes that means choosing fonts that are designed for screen and have a print counterpart. For certain, don't use PostScript fonts, because you cannot use PostScript fonts in an ebook. So use OTF or TTF fonts, so OpenType or TrueType fonts. Restrict your font choices to those two categories. And plan for digital. Use fonts that are going to look good on screens as well. Make sure that you have the font license if you're going to embed fonts in ebooks. And my other thing, aside from always haranguing people about accessibility, is that people should pay much greater attention to the design of their ebooks. Ebooks don't have to look like Internet Explorer circa 1998. They can look really nice. They can be well designed and have pristine typography. It just requires a little bit of planning, like thinking about the font issue before you start production and choosing fonts that will port well to screens.
Getting to the fonts for just a second, you mentioned licensing. There are you can get print fonts, but then you find out that if you're going to use it or embed it in your ebook, there's a whole different pay structure involved. But that's avoidable, isn't it? I mean, there are fonts that people can leave that don't have all those crazy restrictions.
So there is a Google Web Font repository. If you Google Web Fonts, it will take you to that page. And those fonts are almost entirely open license. So that means you can put them in print books and you can put them in ebooks, and you're relatively safe doing either. People who have a Creative Cloud subscription, so InDesign, Photoshop, Illustrator, etc., they can use Typekit fonts in their ebooks. So that's something that is possibly underused. Typekit fonts, there's an excellent selection there, and they are all open for you to use in your ebooks.
Typekit fonts are the fonts that basically come with the Adobe Creative Cloud, and if you have a subscription, you can use those in your print and your ebooks then.
They don't ship with the Creative Cloud. It's a website that you go to and you can browse fonts there and choose from them and then open them with your Creative Cloud subscription, and then they're available for you to embed in InDesign files, for example. So it's a little bit different than shipping with. It's more like adjacent to
you. Right. You can access them until your subscription runs out, and then.
Yes, it's true. Everything is subscription based these days.
Yeah,
and Monotype, another really enormous font foundry, also has a really good subscription package, and that includes rights to embed fonts in ebooks. So it's quite affordable. It's about $10 a month. So if that's something that feels, if you're going to use a lot of fonts and that feels affordable, that's also an excellent route to go.
Great, that's good advice, Laura Brady. Let's talk just about some big picture issues. What are the big issues among ebook producers today? When you guys sit around after the conference, aside from all the gossip about the people who aren't there at the bar with you, what do you guys talk about?
Yeah, so a lot of times when ebook developers get together on Twitter or in real life, we are often bemoaning things like device fragmentation. So that means, you know, one EPUB looks different in a million different places. And that often means a lot of commiseration about Kindle, to be frank, because things don't always work as expected on Amazon products. And so there are lots of complaints from our ends about that kind of thing. But what other things we talk about are other big picture things. Like, I talk a lot about design. I want people to take ebook design a lot more seriously and to think about it and to put some effort into it. Like using color images, using color in ebooks and understanding how it will degrade. That's the sort of thing that goes on. There are also like other bigger picture things, like talking about the spec and where that's going. The spec is always the EPUB specification is always under development. There are always things happening in that space that accommodate the needs of different players internationally and domestically, and that's also super interesting.
How big an influence does Amazon have on ebook development and the marketplace? Is it kind of driving the what you think you can and can't do? I know, like, for example, on a Kindle, you can, you can change the fonts, right? So all your effort going into typography is kind of for nothing if someone can just, like, make it bigger, smaller, move it around, change it from Times Roman to some sans serif font.
Yeah, and that's another sort of real mitigating factor in ebook design, but I think it's something you have to take into account. If you think about ebooks from an accessibility point of view, being able to alter the font is key to accessibility. For example, dyslexic readers need to be able to change the font to a font that is easier for them to consume content and speaks directly to understanding the content. And being able to upsize the font and downsize the font is critical to the reader experience in a lot of cases. So most reading systems allow you to change the font. So ebook design is complicated by that fact, for certain. It's not like designing for print or even designing for websites, frankly. It's quite different.
When you're approaching ebooks as a designer, print book designers, they're thinking in terms of point size and typography and leading and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Those things are not the kind of things then that you can spend a lot of time on, because at a whim, the reader can change all that. So what are you're talking about the importance of ebook design. What are some of the things that make ebook design so completely different mindset from print design?
Well, it's partly that discomfort with the reader being able to change everything, and so understanding that you can still plan for a good-looking ebook. There are still defaults, and readers can always go back to what are called the publisher defaults in most reading systems, and that will reflect your original design. But thinking about how things look on screen and planning for it, like the line height, for example, the space between lines is completely different on screens than it is in print in terms of comfort and readability. And the base point size is also completely different on screens than in print. It has different needs than print designers are used to thinking about. So it's all those things are still relevant, particularly the font issue, but other things as well.
And I guess you'd say the problems haven't been solved.
No.
there's no clear solution, but you should never enter into this not thinking about them at all. You really have to...
That's what I think, yeah. I mean, it's a big picture issue. You want it to look as good as possible in as many places as possible and be accessible to as many readers as possible as well. So
yeah. So final question, what do you think is in the future for ebooks? The market, 10 years ago, everybody was saying, well, it's going to swallow up print books, and that hasn't happened. Ebooks are, 20%, maybe more or less, depending on the genre. Mm-hmm. Is the failure of ebooks to take hold in a larger way the result of platform constraints? Is it people's like endearing love of the p-book? Do you think that if ebook readers can somehow better replicate the experience of a printed book, Kindle, like with a cover and pages that scare quote turn, is that going to make a difference?
I think that ebooks are now a fact of life. All publishers have to produce them. You're missing an enormous part of the marketplace if you miss it, especially with some kinds of publishing, like genre publishing, for example. If you don't produce an ebook, you're really missing out on a lot of readers. I think it's a little bit silly to for ebook people to try to position ebooks as a print competitor. They're more like something that works with print and should sort of swim alongside of that print product. And it doesn't have to be the same. It shouldn't compete with print in terms of design values, but understand the affordances of ebooks. The affordances of ebooks is that they're flexible and can be different from reader to reader, and that means that more readers can consume them in a comfortable way. So it takes into account large print readers and print disabled readers, readers who only read on the subway, that kind of thing. It is flexible and agile enough to be different for every reader who opens that ebook.
Are dedicated e-readers coming, you think, that are going to be more interesting than just opening it up on your iPad?
Oh, what a good question. I do not know the answer to that. I sure wish I did. Where's my crystal ball? Mobile is a real driver of ebooks. There's no question about that. That subway reader is driving how we think about ebooks for the most part. There are still lots of people who love their dedicated e-readers, so I wouldn't sneeze at that either. I don't really know that end of the business as well, to be honest, Peter.
Okay, well, maybe in a year we can come back and see how things have changed then.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking with Laura Brady about ebooks, the future of ebooks. Thank you very much, Laura, for spending time today and for all your great information.
Oh, you're welcome very much. Thanks, Peter.
If you'd like to find out more about Laura Brady and get more information about the ebook craft conference or EPUB Secrets, check the notes to this podcast. You can also follow Laura on Twitter at the handle @LauraB7. Thanks again, Laura.
Oh, you're welcome.
The subject of future developments came up in our podcast conversation with Laura Brady. Now, if you've got enough money in royalties or advances saved up, you can probably spend your year going to conferences that are either asking, what is happening to print books, or what is happening to ebooks? You often hear this conversation like it's some kind of zero-sum game. If you sell more ebooks, you'll sell fewer print books. Or the reason that ebooks aren't selling better is that people still love their p-books too much. But as Laura explained, the ebook and the p-book are really two different creatures. They complement each other. The ebook offers maximum flexibility and customization, and it's great for the disabled or for the traveler. The p-book offers the literary experience informed by the physicality of the object itself and by the aesthetic dedication of its design and editorial team. On those points alone, you wouldn't think that they'd appeal to the same audience at all. You can and you should have both. Where I think you can really draw a line of demarcation is how each platform is very different indeed in regard to how it offers access to the marketplace. When it comes to ebooks, just about any publisher or author publisher can jump in and reach exactly the same audience as every other publisher. But for print books, access to the marketplace, the brick and mortar bookseller especially, is severely limited. It is more expensive to produce and transport print books, and most booksellers don't want you at all, as the mainstream publishers and those with good distribution can fill the bookstore shelves most adequately without your contribution. The ebook has become the de facto entry level for the less experienced and the less well-funded, with all that that implies. Across the board, it means quality varies greatly. And as Laura was saying, unless you've got a competent grasp on what lies under the hood, you may be producing a very glitchy product. Plus, it's so easy to get your ebook out there these days that it's almost impossible to be heard amongst the noise and the commotion. So it's just as easy to get lost and remain undiscovered. So it's the very things that make ebooks so easy that make them so tough to build your company and revenue streams on. And did I mention they are highly discounted and that consumers can get all the free ebooks they need from places like BookBub? Well, it's just something to consider. As in a lot of publishing, what looks easy really isn't. and what looks like it will save the world is in the end very labor intensive and requires careful planning and realistic expectations. Now, to comment on this podcast, tweet to me using the handle at Peter Goodman or at IBPA. Just a reminder, if you're already a member of IBPA, we appreciate your support and be sure to let us hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about IBPA or are considering joining, check out the IBPA website at ibpa-online.org. Thanks for listening to Inside Independent Publishing. I'm your host, Peter Goodman. Keep your nose in that book. And as my bosses in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun.